The One Covenant Series, The Flaming Sword. Genesis 3:2-4 reads, "At the east of the Garden of Eden he placed the cherubim and a flaming sword that turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life." Luke 22:36 reads, "He said to them, 'But now let the one who has a money bag take it, and likewise a knapsack, and let the one who has no sword sell his cloak and buy one.' And they said, 'Look, Lord, here are two swords.' And he said to them, 'It is enough.'" Jeremiah 7:22 reads, "For in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt, I did not speak to your fathers or command them concerning burnt offerings and sacrifices. But this command I gave them: Obey my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people, and walk in all the way that I command you, that it may be well with you." The most profound and deeply brilliant of all that is found in the Hebrew perspective is the concept of covenant, which means a solemn, binding oath between two parties accompanied by a sign. The relationship implied by the Hebrew term berit, translated as the English covenant, is the relationship between a lord and his servants, for in Hebrew, a berit is a promise that is made unilaterally by a lord to his servants that he will protect and provide for those servants. The promise is not required by any law nor forced on the lord by his servants. It is entirely voluntary. This word berit is formed out of the Hebrew word bara, which means a cutting. The Hebrew term used to express the action of making a covenant is karat berit, which literally means to cut a covenant. While there are many speculation as to the origin of this word, let us set aside all the assumptions that have been advanced associating with what a covenant means in other cultures to simply look at what the words of Scripture say about this Hebrew covenant. Words mean things. To simply understand what these words mean necessitates viewing them from the Hebrew perspective they were written in, and not our current English culture. We must constantly be reminded of all the books of Scripture were written by Hebrews out of a Hebrew mindset influenced by a Hebrew culture that produced a uniquely Hebrew perspective being conveyed primarily to a Hebrew audience, which understood the nuances of the Hebrew language. The words of Scripture tell us in Revelation 19:10 that the testimony of Yeshua is the spirit of prophecy. Gesenius' Hebrew Chaldee lexicon defines the Hebrew word navah, translated as the English word prophecy, as the spoken oracles of Yahweh. So the testimony of the life of Yeshua reveals how Yahweh's words are to be construed. If something we think or have been taught as truth is not found in the eyewitness accounts recorded about the life and words of HaMashiach ben David, the Messiah of David's line, then at the very least we should hold it suspect until we are given understanding from the Father concerning what those words might mean. The life of Yeshua is the benchmark by which everything is measured, including other Scripture. The first time we find the word covenant is used in Scripture is not with Moses or even Abraham, but with Yahweh declaring he will establish his covenant with Noah. The Hebrew word translated establish in that verse is kum, which means to take something already in existence and cause it to stand, be firm, fixed, and permanent. How is that possible if we are to believe religious theology that says the covenant was not given until Sinai? Hosea 6 tells us that Adam, the first Hebrew, was the first of Yahweh's family to be disobedient to his covenant. That happened in the garden, even before Noah. The covenant spoken of was in the heart of Yahweh from the beginning in the garden, to have a family that behaviorally proclaimed the glory that is his to the rest of the nations already in existence from creation. This is how Abraham was able to keep Yahweh's covenant 430 years before Sinai, and how Moses could use Yahweh's covenant to settle issues among the people of the wilderness 2 chapters before his words were written on tablets of stone. Because Yahweh's words describe his nature and they knew his nature, the purpose of the Torah, Yahweh's words, is to show us how to become partakers of his divine nature. For example, John 10:34 reads, Yeshua answered them, Isn't it written in your Torah, I have said you people are Elohim, that is, gods. When the serpent offered to Eve the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, it was the knowledge that there was a difference between what is good, the current provision of the Father, and what is evil, a perceived lack of good. The serpent told them that in the day that they partook of that knowledge, they would become as gods. He was not lying. Yahweh had provided everything they could possibly need in the garden. Before they ate of that fruit, to them every circumstance was good, because goodness is in the nature of Yahweh, where they were abiding. But the moment they disregarded Yahweh's words and partook of the fruit they were told not to eat, they became as gods, with the ability to determine for themselves what was good provision and what was not. They became gods to themselves by supplanting his purpose with their own self-determination, a position that could not be tolerated, as it was in conflict with the first of his words, to have no other God besides him, thus necessitating a separation from the source of life. Yeshua spoke to this state of being in his reference to its mention in the quote from Psalm 82:6, You are gods. There was no death in the garden because Adam and Eve were living in perpetuity with the source of life. The serpent in the garden told Eve that if they partook of the fruit, they would not die, as Yahweh had said. Did they physically die when they ate of it? No, they did not. So the serpent was not lying. But the death Yahweh was speaking to was not simply physical. He is the source of life, which is light. Life equals light, and death equals darkness. In the same way that it is a physical impossibility for light and darkness to occupy the same space at the same time, so it is with life and death. You will either have one or the other. There is no middle ground. Yahweh's words contain his light, the nature of his spirit. They choose to ignore his words for their actionable disobedience to those words, and as a result, chose darkness instead. Thus, a separation from the tree, the source of life, became necessary because anything apart from life is considered to be death, even though it still may be breathing. From the Hebrew perspective, a Homo sapien is not human unless it abides in the spirit of life. This is what Yeshua addressed in Matthew 8:22, when he said to let the dead bury the dead. So it is possible for a Homo sapien to exist apart from Yahweh, but from the Hebrew perspective, that is not considered life. Too many have been taught that within Scripture they find the source of life and call the Scriptures the Word, when the Scriptures themselves testify that Yahweh is the Word. These are the ones who try to use Scripture to fashion themselves rather than allow Spirit to make them into His image. Yeshua said He came to immerse in Spirit and in fire, the fire of Yahweh's words. Hosea 6:5 also tells us that His people are hewn, cut out by His words, and that His judgments go forth as light. Hebrews 4:12 and Ephesians 6 tell us that the sword of the Spirit is Torah, the words of Yahweh. Couple those passages with Jeremiah 23:29, where we are told that His word is like fire, so that when we read Genesis 3:2-4, at the east of the Garden of Eden, He placed the cherubim and a flaming sword that turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life. We should understand that flaming sword to be His covenant words, which guard His kingdom of life. Consider Jeremiah 31:2. Thus says Yahweh, the people who survived the sword found grace in the wilderness. The fact of life is that we all are in the wilderness. Apart from the sustaining Spirit of the source of life, we find ourselves desperate, desolate, and in need. But not all are able to find grace in their wilderness. In fact, most do not. Grace is for those who survive the sword. Who are these people? They are the ones to whom Yahweh says, "You shall be my people, and I will be your Elohim." They are the people who have been cut with His words. They are the ones who have bled. Surviving the sword means putting your life in the hands of Yahweh as the world slices away. It means cutting loose from the patterns that block your way into the wilderness. It means standing unafraid in the face of hardship, pain, and death, established in His words. It means that Yahweh is the absolute Lord of my life, no matter what circumstances I may encounter. It means worshiping Him through the keeping of His words, even if He doesn't save me from the furnace or restore me from disaster, because He is worthy of my allegiance. Some seek to flee the wilderness. They seek remedies for self-protection. They turn from the call to embrace the patterns of a world in rebellion to His words. They say, "I wish I could live by faith, but I have to be practical." They do not know that grace resides in inhospitable circumstances. Mercy comes unexpectedly, not by religious incantations or magical name formulae. Mercy is unmerited surprise. But you can't be surprised by something that you plan and control. You have to bleed in order to live mercifully within His presence. Consider Matthew 10:34. "Do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword." When we think of swords, we think of violence, either in aggression or in reciprocity. We think of violence because that is the nature of man. The nature of the Father is shalom. To look at Luke 22:36 on its surface, it would seem that Yeshua is taking an opposing stance from that shalom in advocating a violent position. But when we look at that verse in context of His displayed life, just a few lines further down in Luke 22:49, is seen a different set of values exampled. Yeshua understood that the character of Yahweh, as expressed in Torah and as evidenced in Hebrews 4:12, is to be defended within against circumstances befalling us from without. The word picture for shalom in Paleo Hebrew says that peace comes when we destroy the authority that establishes chaos. Yahweh's words must first destroy chaos in order to bring the peace of being whole and complete. Seekin's comment helps us connect the idea of consuming and destroying with the covenant sign Yahweh provides for his family. Yahweh's words of necessity brings division because it destroys the authority that establishes the chaos in people's lives they have come to embrace and love. The Sabbath is the authorized sign of Yahweh's covenant pledge to those who practice it. To live in a covenant relationship with Yahweh means to keep his words. And the fourth of those words is to remember to keep Shabbat. We must be careful that we do not engage in eisegesis, that is, reading into the text, rather than exegesis, reading out of the text, when looking at the words of Scripture. So when Yeshua is telling the disciples to pick up a sword, it is in the context of violence about to come upon him, and how they should place a guard on how they react. Remember the pearl of great price in Matthew 13:46? He is saying to acquire such a defensive measure over their heart, whatever the cost. The use of the sword he is advocating is not for physical wielding, but as a guard to not allow external circumstances to overwhelm and compromise the way of the tree, the kingdom of life that now resides within. That did not become tainted by the same sin that separated Adam and Eve from that life. Theirs was the sin of self-determination. They became the determinant as to what was good and what was evil, instead of embracing his sufficiency as good in all circumstance. Yeshua is saying to guard to resist against that evil, and not to let it encroach upon their heart at all costs. To let the words of Yahweh do the proper cutting or hewing upon their motivation. It is only those who pass through the flaming sword of the words of Yahweh who will be eating at the tree of the source of life, that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14.